Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinati Guma, and joining me to wrap this week up are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Thamsanqa Netta from Shiloh Capital. Thank you to the both of you for joining us. Tammy, I want to start with you. When you look at the movements this week in the markets, they were largely positive. So I want to know, I mean, is it a case of investor sentiment turning around to a more rewarding mood than a willingness to punish the market?
No, I think it's a market volatility story. I think some shares will be repriced every time we get into a reporting season or a point where we start discovering new information. There will be a repricing of the shares. And I think it's also important to recognize that we still have a long way to go in a lot of these economic differences. For example, the central bank has raised rates at 0.75%, which is a historic outcome. So there's a lot of other things and factors that are going to play into the markets going in and up and down, which is not necessarily all down to investor sentiment.
Talking about investor sentiment towards the earnings that we've seen out of the U.S., it's largely been positive, Gary, but I'm not sure if it's actually positive results, knocking the ball out the park, or if it's just that expectations are so low at this point?
Well, I mean, we did see, I think earnings growth expectations are just above 5%. So not expecting, for S&P 500 companies at least. So not expecting a huge amount. And we did see analysts obviously tempering their forecasts going into the start of the season. But largely, most companies are beating. And I think as Thamsanqa was saying, it's a matter of new information, and really, I suppose the information that we want to understand is how are these stocks going to fare and how are these companies going to fare in a high inflation environment. And so far, I think the result has been fairly positive, and that's why we're getting a fairly strong movement off those lows. But I think it's important to note that earnings seasons are normally positive, and like you say, it's generally because expectations are a little bit lower than perhaps where they should be.
Tammy, you mentioned the 75 basis point hike that we got from the SARB yesterday. Really, really surprising, a jaw-dropping moment there. Do you think that the bank is on the right path to fighting inflation, or are they maybe making a policy mistake by front-loading too much in such an environment in South Africa?
I think it was a signal. I think the Reserve Bank had to make a signal. They had to let us know where they're at and that they're not going to risk their credibility on inflation targeting for the sake of whatever may be economically or politically at stake at the time. I think they've been very clear that fiscal policy is not their role. They have been staying out of their quantitative easing trend, so the South African Reserve Bank has kept itself outside of printing money. So they have the legitimacy and the credibility which other global central banks don't have to raise rates, and they're clear on it. So this hike was an indication to the market. It was a clear indication to the banks about their lending and how they should manage their credit going forward. It was an indication to retailers and all people who supply goods and services to the economy about pushing all the costs to the customer. I mean, ensuring that if they continue in that way, there's going to be pain all around. So everybody's going to make more rational decisions and more accommodative decisions around how they manage the pricing, supply chain, and as well as credit.
Gary, your thoughts? Because, I mean, you look at the Fed, of course, everybody knows that it was a mistake to not raise rates sooner. We started earlier than the Fed, and I mean, they literally have an economy. They fell behind the curve with quite a resilient economy. And we started so early, and now we're going for 75 basis points. Your thoughts on that?
I don't know. Yeah, I think it's always difficult to kind of say that, the Fed started too late or started too early. I mean, monetary policy is, when you tweak monetary policy via interest rates, the effects are only felt, a year to 18 months, sometimes 2 years after the fact. So, yes, they could have potentially started hiking sooner in the U.S. at least. But, I mean, I think we've got to remember that the unemployment figures in the U.S. are still very, very robust. And we're yet to be in a recession. So I think everyone is kind of almost assuming we're already in a recession in the US, but the fact is that we're not. I mean, everyone's chatting about stagflation, but the fact is if we see a decent growth number out, I think it's on the 28th, I think you might see a little bit of optimism returning to markets. And the idea that they've been hiking aggressively, I mean, the only way that interest rate hikes work to cool an economy is that it's actually got to kill businesses. It's got to kill spending in the economy. It's got to, it's almost like chemotherapy for an economy. So I don't think we've seen the interest rate hiking policy working to the system just yet. And I think we're still kind of dealing with the effects of monetary policy from you know, 18 months ago. So let's see how it pans out. I mean, should we have hiked 75 basis points yesterday? At least the currency is getting a little bit stronger, but my sense is that our issues are structural, and we definitely don't have the same unemployment situation in South Africa that the US is facing. So, you know, making capital more expensive in South Africa, you know, less projects that are viable when you've got an unemployment rate around 35%. I don't know. I kind of would have tended to go with a 50 basis points and try and just keep hold of a little bit of growth.
Okay, I get that. But I think on the base of it all, what I'm getting from the both of you is, you know what? Let the Reserve Bank do what it needs to do, which is in, you know, price stability, inflation targeting. And then we just need to, the rest of the government organs need to do what they need to do in order to stimulate economic growth structurally. Tammy, there's a question here. Where is the panel on the debate on Netflix? Just obviously we were talking about US earnings, and Netflix is surprised to the upside, particularly with earnings and also with subscriber growth. Losses rather. They had less losses than we had anticipated. Was this enough to shut down the naysayers?
Unfortunately, no. The reason is twofold. The first is the cost of content for Netflix is ridiculously higher than some of its competitors, especially Disney. Secondly, the competition is also quiet. When Netflix started, they had a blue ocean in front of them. They were alone. They developed a concept and they went full in and became market dominant. Now there are other people who've seen that their market is existing. And they are also going into that space, specifically Amazon and Disney, both of whom have also got very big balance sheets. And Disney, on top of that, has proven market content. Whereas Netflix, they're coming to learn that not all content is quality content and not all content will drive users and subscribers. Whereas on the other hand, Disney knows for a fact that a lot of their titles are going to attract people to their platform. So I think Netflix's next challenge will be how to produce quality content in an efficient and cost-managed way. And I think the partnership with Microsoft is going to start bringing that into play. I also think that partnership is probably a first stage in a potential takeover of Netflix by Microsoft to sort of bring them into the space and give Microsoft access to that space to be able to compete with Amazon. We've got to make peace with the fact that in terms of SaaS technology, Microsoft is the leader. So I think Netflix, all in all, has proven to be resilient, but we've got to acknowledge that not all content they've produced is great, and they've spent a lot of money producing it.
Yeah, and they're really punting their content. Just before the show, I was going through my emails, and they'd sent me an email saying that, watch out, the Grey Man is coming. So, of course, they're launching it today on the platform. Gary, just on Netflix, I mean, is it because you look at how the market reacted, and it was a really good reaction, but is it a case of the market didn't really pay attention to the fine print? Because I was reading an analysis, and, you know, just on subscribers, they were actually saying Netflix actually lost more customers in their bigger markets like the US, Europe, Middle East and Africa. And then they only had meaningful growth in subscribers in Asia Pacific, which is not quite a small market for them.
Yeah, I don't know if the market's getting it wrong, but I think it all comes down to pricing. So I mean, Netflix was off about 75% for the year. So I mean, you there's been a significant drawdown in the stock price, and that share price movement was obviously predicting a fairly large subscriber loss. I mean, I think they were looking for about 2 million lost subscribers. They got just under 1 million subscribers lost. So it was a big improvement on what people thought. So I think you've just got to be careful when you're looking at earnings announcements. Look at the reaction after earnings. I mean, an 8% rally sounds wonderful when you read it in the headline, but in the context of a 75% fall first, it doesn't look quite as good. So, earnings announcements, stocks will react quickly, and I think it's probably better to take a longer term view on Netflix and see where is their competitive advantage going to come from in future. And as Tommy was saying, the content wars are really heating up, and unfortunately, Netflix, as just a retailer of content, I think it's going to struggle. I mean, if you look at Amazon Prime, Amazon Prime can run Amazon Prime at a loss forever. It's just about engagement. It's just about getting hold of that community so that they can sell them the Prime subscription services, so that they can sell them, millions of products through their marketplace and all other things that Amazon does. So, you look at something like Disney as well. Their content used to sit on Netflix, and they obviously, with the launch of Disney Plus, have removed their content, making it even more difficult for Netflix to compete. And it seems the response that Netflix has made to a very, very tough environment is that they're on the cusp of launching an ad-supported, cheaper version of their platform. Now, when you start discounting, that's just a sign of a business for me in trouble. And I'd be very, very concerned. I mean, yes, there probably is some value down 75%. You probably would expect a little bit of a stock rally. And I'm not saying you should go and get it out of your portfolio now. But, if you see another 20, 30% in Netflix from here, I would definitely be dumping the stock. I don't think the company is going to look good longer term. Unless we can get the Microsoft partnership, and they can use it not to sell content, but to sell Microsoft services.
Yeah.
They need a big brother. That's the only way forward.
Yeah, that's the way it's going, I think.
Yeah. So, looking at where it's come from, it's now at around 200 per share. Tammy, if you were to go into it now, is it just for a patient investor? And would you say that if an investor does believe in the growth story of Netflix, this is the right time to go in?
I don't think Netflix does have a growth story at this stage. I think the story they have is they've got a world-class service with great content and good customer base, and are going to inevitably be bought out by Microsoft, Google, Facebook, or the likes. I think it's just it's an inevitability. You can't spend $20 billion on content ad infinitum and expect to be a great company.
There's a question here on the panel's view on Nedbank. So, yeah, they had a trading update out sometime during the week saying, I think, that they expect earnings to be up more than a fifth. Gary, would you be going for Nedbank in this environment and also in that banking complex?
I think Nedbank is kind of our second choice bank. We prefer FirstRand over Nedbank, just better ROEs. I think Nedbank is a very, very decent business, and I think it's avoided some of the technical issues that some of the other banks have faced. Now, you look at it, obviously a rising interest rate environment will be, through the endowment effect, will be fairly positive for banking stocks as they get that margin expansion. But again, I think you need to look longer term. With much higher interest rates, there is that kind of initial impact that helps to boost banking earnings. Mm. And it is, for me, a fairly good place to hide in a very difficult market. But longer term, banks will always be reliant on the growth in the underlying economy. And if we're going to be hiking at 75 basis points, I think growth is going to be very, very tough. And I think, Nedbank, obviously, out of all the banks, its CIB division is particularly good. But I think, higher cost of capital, fewer deals, fewer projects. We've already seen M&A dropping off as well. So I think good results for now, but just let's keep a very close eye on growth numbers to kind of inform our decision going forward.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that as well. We saw after the MPC meeting yesterday, the financial the FINI 15 was up more than 2% yesterday, and of course, yeah, they are due to benefit from the high interest rates. But then, how are they going to fare in a slowing economy? Tammy, your thoughts on Nedbank?
It's a no for me. I think if I look at the loan book, if I also look at CIB is a lumpy earning business. So you have to look at personal and business banking. You've got to look at mortgage, business credit, and where it's going now. It's going to be a hard time. They don't have the size of the other banks in terms of assets. So it's going to be difficult for them cost of capital wise, in our view. And then I think thirdly, it's quite a competitive area. So they compete with very, very big boys. First Rand is a big boy. Standard Bank is a big boy. And as a result of that, it gets tricky to attract the right customers who bring in the right business at the right time. So my view is, although the numbers look good initially, I think over time it's going to wash out when credit starts being an issue, especially consumer credit, and also when business starts being an issue where working capital cycles are changing, capital becomes more expensive. So I don't see it as a great stock. It's a great business, but not a great stock.
Okay. Talk about consumers. Gary, Mr. Price, it's been a firm favorite this week. And I think also their deal with Studio 88 got approved by the Competition Commission this week. What is Mr. Price doing right in that apparel retail sector that, I don't know, other retailers aren't really catching on to?
Well, I think they've got a very good market position. So the idea that they are fashion, like they're a value fashion brand, but they're not targeting necessarily the most indebted and the lower LSM consumers. They're actually targeting fairly wealthy people that are looking to save money and
interesting point
and buy on a budget. and I mean that for me is exactly where you want to be in the current environment. You want to kind of have the resilience of the more affluent customer, but you want him to be concerned about kind of watching the purse strings and making smart decisions. So and that's kind of the environment that we're at, like operating in at the moment. I mean, from an operational point of view, I mean, Mr. Price is absolutely solid. They've got their kind of omni-channel offering, and I think their digital sales are just increasing every reporting period. So I think of all the apparel retailers in South Africa, I think they're the ones that are probably getting it the most right.
Very interesting that Gary actually says it's for, consumers that are all right when you look at the purse, but they just want to spend on a budget. They want to ball on a budget. Tammy, then do you look at Pepco that's also packaged as, bringing a value offering? Do you think that's going to have more headwinds than Mr. Price?
Yeah, I think Pepco is targeting the lower LSM market largely. Yeah. So they're into the volumes game, whereas Mr. Price is quite niched in their offering. And they also are not growing ridiculously. So when they make an acquisition, when they bring on something new or they bring on a new market product, they've done a lot of homework in doing so. So they've managed how they grow. They've managed as well where they are in their store. So if you look at their store spread, they're not in every mall, in every place all the time. They manage where they are. They manage the population they're addressing. And they themselves and price themselves in a manner where they're just the Pepco, but they're just, you have to be in the middle class per se to really appreciate what they bring to the table. So I think it's the difference is the target market, their pricing, and also their growth strategy, which is very well managed in our view, where they don't go out and acquire, they don't go out and spread stores. They look carefully, they do their research and make sure when they enter a certain market like Mr. Price Sport or any other market they enter it with caution and they do it in a well-managed manner.
Mm. There's a question here. In your opinion, has the resources/mining stocks hit the bottom, or is there more downside to come? Gary, they're actually up today by quite a lot. Gary?
I wish I knew the answer to that.
wish you had a crystal ball.
So I think maybe important to understand is that commodity cycles are very, very long term. So you know, the bottom for when the short term, medium term, long term. I think there can be a lot more pain, a lot more downside. Especially if we do go into a recession, if we see global growth really dropping off, I think there can be a lot more pain in commodity prices. You've seen just incredible run up, and we've seen sort of a correction, but I don't think we've seen a change into the cycle yet. So we might easily get a bounce back, and I mean I saw a note out this morning that was more constructive on iron ore. Out of China for the first time in a while, just saying that the stimulus out of China is going to kind of fuel that infrastructure spending, and you might see the likes of iron ore doing particularly well. That you might get a re-rating there. I mean, but commodities is such a broad thing. I mean, I think there's good commodities and there's bad commodities. If you're going into something like battery technology, I think a lot of the froth has come out of those investments. Like, looking at some of the battery minerals, that could be interesting now with the little sell-off that we've seen. I still think energy, I don't know, energy is a little bit difficult for me as well. I mean, we've seen a moderation, but a lot of that has been strategic petroleum reserves. It's been deals with Russia. I think the actual capex in the oil markets hasn't been there, and I don't think we're close enough to EVs yet. So I think volatility is still going to be the name of the game. I think oil could be all over the place. I mean, I think long term, we expect it to kind of return to between $70 and $90 a barrel, but that's not to say it won't go to $150 a barrel first. So, a lot and very difficult to predict, but I think iron ore, battery metals, maybe not oil.
Yeah, a lot to consider there. Let's go into telecoms. There's a question here on Vodacom. What's the panel's view on Vodacom with the whole MTN and Telkom deal? They actually had an update yesterday talking about revenue growth, some pain in Tanzania when it comes to financial, their fintech business. Tell me, Vodacom, bullish or not in the telcos sector?
At this point, neutral. Neutral in the sense that wait and see. I think what Vodacom is really trying to do is move away from being just a telco to being a fully fledged digital business. And I think there's merit in that, and I think there's scope in that. However, how they roll it out and how they go about doing it is going to be the key element, which is, again, part of what the MTN transaction is really about, is that BCX and the businesses around that enable it to evolve out of just call and data to more a platform and a holistic app. Vodacom is really trying to put together a marketplace app, and they want to really drive their business that direction. Mm-hmm. So I think at this stage, neutrality is on our end. We don't have necessarily a down view or an up view. We think it'll perform if they manage to execute what they're doing well. But to be able to do that, we need to see them actually address the market with that kind of data, with that kind of platform, and make it work. And with the MTN Telkom deal, I genuinely will be surprised if the Competition Commission permits that deal to go through. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot there that MTN will benefit from that will just price out Vodacom. It took forever for the sale of Neotel to happen. So many people knocked on that door.
Yeah.
And again, the Competition Commission shut that down. So I'll be very surprised, but Putuma Nhlego is a smart man. He may be able to pull something off.
Mm. All right, let's get to your stock picks for today. Gary, what will it be?
Yeah, I'm going with a NASDAQ growth note structured product. So I actually just priced this just before the show. So it's really simple. Instead of buying a NASDAQ ETF, you just buy a structured product on the NASDAQ. Now, the difference is this will be uncapped. So just like an ETF, if it goes up, it'll go up, except you get 104% participation. So you actually get more. You'll get 4% more performance by buying the credit note rather than the underlying ETF. At the same time, you'll also get 30% downside protection. So if the NASDAQ hasn't finished its fall, and you think it might potentially be down, say, 20% over the next 5 years, and you want to protect yourself from that outcome, you will get all your money back, so because of that 30% capital protection. So obviously, with structured products, you normally lose the dividends, but with 104% participation, the NASDAQ at the moment has a very low dividend yield. It's under 0.5%. So it'll be more than compensated by the extra participation on the upside. And it's a 5-year note, so you've got basically 5 years to see if the view plays out.
Very interesting. Tell me on your side, your stock pick.
I'm simpler than him. I'm betting on the Chinese consumer. Pinduoduo, mm-hmm. Duo, it's a marketplace app and transaction platform. They are well positioned, growth well, bringing in great customers, and I think it'll do well going forward.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time and just answering those questions for us. So that's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, Gary Boyson from Rancis and Thamsanqa Nqonetha from Shiloh Capital. From me, Zinathi Kuma, and the rest of the team, have a great weekend. This.